Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. On today's episode of Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to talk about low-value care. That's care that offers little or no clinical benefit to patients, and that may actually harm them. Yet, we still pay for it, and we pay for it in more ways than one. We're going to talk about what happened to patients that stopped going to the doctor or hospital because of the COVID-19 outbreak, how we can use that experience to reduce the prevalence of low-value care, and if we do that, who wins and who loses? Our resident experts on Foresight Friday Roundup to comment on these topics are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Gary Bisbee, co-founder and executive chairman of the Health Management Academy. Hey, Dave. Hey, Gary. How's it going?
Morning.
It's going.
It's going up, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Listen, it's going forward at any rate.
All right. Before we talk about low-value care, I'm just curious if either of you remember having a diagnostic test that you knew was a waste of time and money and was maybe just part of some treatment protocol. Dave, you ever hit with any extra radiation that you didn't need?
Well, I don't know about radiation, but every time I get a vitamin D screen, I know that that's not necessary. In our family, sort of the best story with that is Terry's gynecologist, Terry, my wife's gynecologist, who bought a urology or a urine test machine. And every time after that, ordered a urine test, and as I said, it was Terry's former gynecologist that did that.
How about you, Gary? Any tubes or needles stuck in you?
No, I don't know about tubes and needles. I do wonder if I need an X-ray of my teeth every year when I go to get my teeth cleaned. I do wonder about that one.
Well, my internist, he's a minimalist, so no matter what I go in for, he just tells me to stop smoking and lose weight. And then when I tell him I don't smoke, he just says, well, lose some weight. So
Yeah, right. It's
about as far as I get. So I'm doing okay. So let's get right into today's topic, and that's low-value care. Dave, as we've talked about before on the show, a lot of patients have stopped going to the doctor or to the hospital because they're afraid of contracting the virus. Yeah, what are you learning about the health outcomes or the health status of those people?
Well, Dave, your joke about your doctor reminds me of the person who says whenever they get the urge to exercise, they lie down until the feeling passes. Anyway, to the question at hand, patient visits are way, way down. A Kaiser Family Foundation poll out this week found that nearly half of adults say they or a household member have skipped care during the coronavirus outbreak. And of that group, only 11% say their medical condition got worse. Simple math, that means almost 90% of those who skipped care haven't experienced any adverse effect from doing that. However, it's still way too early to make any definitive judgments. We really don't know what the long-term impact will be from delaying care. What we do know, though, is that some people clearly do better with less care. We can't always identify who they're going to be. It reminds me of that often quoted statistic that many fewer people die each year of cardiac disease during the week of the National Convention for Cardiologists, National Cardiologists Convention, than during any other week during the year. So what and now what? We really have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to study in granular detail the impact of delaying care, and we should really set our sights to doing this. It's what economists call a natural experiment. So if we do take this opportunity to really understand the impact of what happens when people delay care, we will, I believe, discover many types of treatments and so on that probably aren't necessary. We'll also identify those that are absolutely essential. And overall, we'll learn how to modulate care so overall outcomes and health improve. And that, of course, should always be the goal of medical research. So let's take advantage of the gift that COVID is giving us in this area.
Got it. Gary, same thing. Patient volume is down clearly. And by some accounts, you know, no one is any sicker. What do you think is going on?
Well, my interviews of CEOs over the last several months have tracked the volume. And clearly, they're all open for business now. And volumes are going up pretty dramatically. A lot of them are back 75, 80, 90% of what their budget originally was. It's some relationship to how much the surge hit that area. For example, if the surge wasn't that strong, then business came back much quicker. People weren't as traumatized by it. But in any event, people are coming back in waves. I think that's clear from the CEOs I've spoken to. As to whether any one of these services people are coming in for is needed or not needed or how needed, that's a tough one because perception of illness is always difficult to measure. As an epidemiologist, I go way back with trying to figure that out. And it's a hard one because what I might perceive as a needed service, you two might not perceive. I might differ in my perception of the importance of an illness or the effect of an illness differently than my physician would or my dentist would. And so I just find it a tough, tough issue. The people that I know, the doctors that I know, and my own experience with them, you know, I wouldn't have said that a substantial amount of treatments are not necessary. Maybe for primary care, I've got a common cold. Do I actually need to go to the urgent care center? Maybe not. Maybe the urgent care center wants me to come in because they want to get paid. I don't really know. But it just strikes me that for the more consequential or serious conditions, I wouldn't have said just off the top of my head that there's a measurable percentage of those that aren't necessary. But I haven't really studied it either. So you know, Dave, you might have a better point of view of it.
Yeah, Dave, anything to add to Gary's comments?
Just a couple observations. One, the volume is definitely coming back, but if Gary's statistic is right, that it's coming back at 75%, that's a little surprising, right? Because if these places went without elective surgeries for a couple of months, you'd expect they'd be back at well over 100%, 125, 150%, you know, as people are catching up. So there's clearly some catching up going on, but I think there's also been some drag. You know, on how to distinguish truly low value care, you know, Gary's right. You know, perception matters, practice patterns matter. But the truth is, a lot of low value care gets practiced because it benefits the medical community. That whole debate that we had about mammograms for women over 40 sort of illustrates the fact, you know, no medical benefit and actually some harm. And yet between the special interest groups and some people, Gary's word about, you know, the perception of needing that kind of overwhelmed the science. And you know, if there was ever a time where we need to emphasize the importance of following the science, it's now during coronavirus when so much kind of random thinking is going on with regard to how we react to the disease. And we should have that same discipline very focused discipline on following science, and when it gives us an answer, actually following it and making sure overall that the system follows it.
That's definitely a good point. And it makes the point, Dave, about medicine is still art and science.
Yeah.
Because we don't know a lot. We turned out we didn't know anything about COVID, did we? So
no.
We know more now than we did 3 months or 4 months ago. And it's like anything, like, salt intake. If you look at the guidance from the various associations, the professional societies, salt intake and their recommendation has changed over time. Mammograms, or when mammograms should be administered, has changed over time. And a lot of it has evolved because we do know more now than we ever did. But there's still just enough art in all of this that it makes it a little difficult to get to the point of assessing what is needed and what's not. Now, I'm not trying to take a position that there's not a lot of services that are provided that probably don't need to. So I am not taking that point, but it is difficult to find that line. There's not a bright line with a lot of this stuff, I would say.
Got it. Gary, let me follow up on that. So what steps do you think the industry can take to get where we need to go on the issue of low-value care? And then if we do that, who wins and who loses?
Well, I think that's a great question, Dave. And ultimately, the previous discussion gets us to this point. So the three of us probably would say technology is important here. It really has only been a few years, relatively speaking, that medical care has been digitized. The High-Tech Act of 2009 is what provided the $35 billion or so to digitize it. Once we have a digitized set of information so that we can get to it, we can remember it, we can analyze it, then we can begin to set some true foundations and build from that. Medical societies are important. The health systems are important. There's a lot of focus on efficiencies now that we didn't find. And now that we've got the data, or at least some of the data we need, I think that is really key. So I would say technology that has provided data and the various technologies that allow us to analyze the data, the incentive of payers to be efficient, I think is helpful. Might go overboard in some cases, but it's helpful. So if you bundle that all up, I think the natural evolution of the sophistication of medicine and this fact that medicine is both art and science, I think the science part is growing based on data, based on technology, and probably based on the volumes. And that's how I would respond. In terms of winners and losers, anything in this direction, the consumer's the winner. I think that's the quick way to answer that question.
Got it. Thanks, Gary. Dave, how can we take what COVID-19 has showed us and use that to reduce the amount of low-value care that we deliver? You mentioned research earlier. And, if that happens, who comes out the winner and who comes out the loser?
Yeah, I'm going to pound the table a little bit here. Because there is a lot we don't know, and we obviously need to use technology and use this opportunity to learn in fundamental ways about what works and what doesn't work. But there's a lot that we do know. The Choosing Wisely initiative, which was 80 plus specialty societies, identified over 600 treatments and procedures that are never necessary, that routinely occur MRIs for lower back pain, for example. And Health Affairs did a study, you know, not too long ago of the 5-year impact of the Choosing Wisely campaign and found no change in physician practice patterns. So this massive effort to identify and publicize low-value care, and we didn't get it, and we didn't get the improvement. So if they made me healthcare czar for a day, you know, perish the thought, probably the first thing I would do would be to thank all the specialty societies and Choosing Wisely for their great research. And I would just stop paying. I'd probably, you know, phase it in over time, but I would just stop paying for those 600 procedures that we already know today aren't necessary, but we continue to do anyway.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. Gary, do you think using money as a, you know, reward or punishment is the way to get at this issue?
Well, we've talked about the almighty dollar on this show almost every time we do it. So sure, I think in the current system, particularly fee-for-service model, dollars work. I think we're going to have Dave as a healthcare czar for more than a day.
to make the kind of difference. Be careful what you wish for, Gary, man.
Well, Dave, you be willing to serve in that role for more than a day?
Yeah. If nominated, I will serve, just like every vice president candidate for Joe Biden.
Let me make the following point, Dave. There is no pay. There's no compensation for being healthcare czar for a day. So
that's okay.
All right.
The satisfaction will be more than enough. Okay.
All right. Well, let's talk about next week, Gary. What will everyone in healthcare be talking about next week? And I have a funny feeling I know what it is.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's not just healthcare, and that is the surge that's going on in various states like Texas, Florida, sort of parts of California and so on. I think that has caused some renewed caution. Businesses are slowing down. In terms of opening up, governors are slowing things down. So the stock market's going to come down, which is going to cause another set of problems. So I just think the issue going forward right now is the surge and where it's going to hit and how pronounced it will be.
Got it. Dave, you agree with that being the big healthcare headline next week?
I do. Last week, I mentioned that every morning I get up and look at the number of new daily cases, the 7-day rolling average published by the New York Times, and it's remarkable how fast it's growing. We're at more than double the rates of just 2 weeks ago. Gary's spot on that. The only other thing I'd mention that kind of boggles my mind is yesterday the Trump administration filed a brief with the Supreme Court looking to outlaw Obamacare, the ACA, and the timing of this just fascinates me. So I think we're going to hear a lot this week of reaction to that in the middle of a pandemic, the Trump administration is trying to unwind the ACA, which has now got popularity ratings approaching 60% of the public. So really scratching my head on that.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll hear about it this week, but we're going to hear about it in November, don't you think?
Yeah, I do.
Dave, and I think it does more than fascinate you, I'm guessing.
Quick, make them healthcare czar for a day. Quick.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Now I want to go on the Supreme
there
Court,
you go.
Man. Why stop at health?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys. Thank you very much. So let's all be careful out there. That's all we have time for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. Thanks again for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.